Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, I chat to Nearform, the Waterford-based company behind the COVID tracker app. Plus, Derek Riley is back, this time talking about the new Honda, which has cameras instead of wing mirrors. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. Ireland's COVID tracker app has more than 1.3 million active users. It's being used to assist the contact tracing process and was built by a Waterford company called Nearform. I'm joined now by Larry Breen, the CMO of Nearform. Larry, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. Thank you for your time. Tell us a little bit about Nearform, the company itself.
So Nearform, we're just over 9 years old, headquartered in Tramore, Waterford, down on the south coast. Founded by Kino Madin, with a view to setting up a professional services business, again, pushing into various marketplaces on a global basis. We're now over 150 people across 21 countries, and we work and deliver solutions, high-end solutions for enterprise customers, very much, you know, on a global basis, US, UK, Europe, some very large companies predominantly that we actually deal with, so the likes of, you know, Condé Nast, who'd be involved in Vogue and some of the other publications that are out there, you know, IKEA, Capital One Bank. The list just goes on and on. A lot of very big brands and stuff will be using our systems out there. We're very heavily involved in the whole open source community. So again, working on some of the underlying technologies and platforms that are obviously, again, then are open sourced, available for tech communities around the world to pick up and actually use to push their projects forwards. And we continue to be a major contributor to those over time.
So you've got a very extensive and impressive client list, and you're one of those companies that usually we, the consumer, don't hear about. We just, enjoy the outputs of your work by interacting with different businesses, but no one really ever knows that it's you guys in the background. However, you really came to light here in Ireland this year because of the COVID tracker app. You're the company behind it, and you've been working with teams in, you know, the HSC, Department of Health, and Garda Síochána. Tell me how that came about.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. So, you know, before COVID and everything else hit, you're absolutely right. The vast majority of people in this country in some frame or other would obviously be using technologies that, you know, Nearform have had a hand in. This year, obviously COVID has struck us all, both as a country, but, you know, as a globe. The HSC is part of their, challenges to try and beat and combat COVID, you know, deal with the whole pandemic and try and minimize its impact on citizens and obviously on the country as a whole, you know, identified contact tracing as one of the key tools that they needed to use. So contact tracing is broken up obviously into the manual contact tracing, where we have folks on the end of phones and they're, you know, ringing us up and saying, hey, you've had a contact event, and sort of tracing through, you know, who you've been in contact with. Obviously, that relies on human memory. There are some, you know, limitations to where it can go. The HSC guys came together and sort of identified, you know, a digital support to that would really be a strong sort of additional tool to bring to that table. They were looking for somebody who had very strong credentials that could deliver, obviously, highly scalable, world-class systems, highly performant, extremely secure, and obviously data privacy was at the heart of everything that was done. And again, so Nearform sort of ticked all those boxes. On top of that, from a Nearform point of view, because of our involvement in the whole open source community, again, the HSC in collaboration with Nearform, it was key that we made sure that the code and every element of the solution was made available for those that wanted to scrutinize it. So, you know, there could be no doubts over what it's doing and how it's actually performing. They went out to market, obviously knew us by reputation, engaged in a call with us one sort of Saturday morning, rang Kian and said, hey, listen, this is something we're looking to achieve. Is it something you're prepared to actually get involved with? We pretty much spun up a team by the end of that day and delivered the first version, prototype version of that app within 10 days. And the journey has continued, you know, on a collaborative basis with the HSC and others since then.
Yeah, this is something that I want to talk about because there are a few facets to this. Obviously, as you explained very well there, you know, contact tracing is a vital part in keeping people well and safe and letting them know if they've come into contact with somebody who has COVID-19. So it's an incredibly important tool. But this is also, the turnaround time on this was pretty immense because we needed it. And I know journalists like myself, we're kind of going, you know, why don't we have it? Why don't we have it? Why don't we have it? But you could easily have released the first version that you had and it wouldn't have worked, or it wouldn't have been up to scratch, or it wouldn't have been as transparent from a data point of view, perhaps, as the one that we have now. So talk to me through, you know, dealing with that type of pressure, but then also ensuring and wanting to ensure that what does go out is the right version for people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So again, normally when you get involved in these kind of major health and government type initiatives, you know, the timescales and timeframes are normally measured in years. Obviously, the Irish government and the HSE recognize that, you know, that's not an option. You know, we needed to move extremely quickly. And obviously, Nearform lend itself to that. But what we needed to be very careful of is, you know, we need to make sure that we're providing a very robust solution, that it's about getting confidence of the citizens out there. So in order for us to combat COVID, we need everybody's help and everybody to get involved. And obviously digital contact tracing puts those tools in every person's hands and allows them to obviously download this app and become an active participant in the battle against COVID. You know, that was super essential. And what we needed to make sure we did then is we put out a product that they could have confidence in, a product that was robust, and above all else, a product that was very much privacy-centric. So neither the HSE nor Nearform or any of the rest of the partners were willing to compromise on that side of it. We needed to be extremely robust. So you're right, we obviously built out the initial product. We took that out and got it tested. So the HSE got involved with a whole bunch of different agencies within the government. So say, right, here's our first run at it. Let's do some trials. Let's do some testing. Let's see how it actually all hangs together. And then we'll iterate from that, which again is part of the whole DNA of how Nearform actually works. We did that very closely with the HSE and we continue to move forward. So when we built that first app, some of the technology solutions that were needed to really make it work weren't available from the likes of Apple and Google. Obviously, we liaised with those guys, and they ultimately came out with their solution, their exposure notification service that, you know, is now underpinning all of these apps. So we were able to, you know, take a lot of learnings from that initial piece and then very quickly evolve the product into the product that hopefully everybody listening has got in their pocket here and now. Where we knew it was robust, we knew it could stand up to the pressures of, you know, the level of adoption, scalability it needed to be. And again, at all times that we weren't compromising on anything to do with, you know, security or data privacy. Super important.
Yeah, and it's so nice to hear that, you know, the data protection side of things is to the forefront of everyone's mind, because I remember before the app launched, I was back and forth with the Data Protection Commission talking about how others have done it or others are planning to do it. I had a number of companies getting on to me saying, you know, I'm willing to give my solution for free to the HSE, but it didn't have that level of transparency that you guys put forward. Were there other things, you know, where did you guys approach this from? Because it would have been easier, I'm sure, to put out a solution that was 100% bulletproof from a contact tracing point of view, but wouldn't have the key values that it has today. Is there anything that you were, you know, possibly apprehensive about compromising on because it could have impacted the performance of the app?
So one of the challenges that you face with the whole digital contact tracing is obviously, you know, from an epidemiology point of view, obviously the more data points that you can actually gather in, you know, the more informed and the more, you know, of an understanding you can get of transmission rates and what's actually happening and who's been affected and all the rest of it. The challenge that you have with that is all of that data, you know, doesn't always lend itself to data privacy of the individual, you know, from a personal data point of view. So the compromises were more around that side was, you know, and it was very clear from the get-go. So, you know, we work in a one team kind of mentality. So the HSE, Nearform, and all the partners kind of came together, and privacy was that, you know, basically that red line. Let's not move on that. it is what it is. And every decision that's made needs to be scrutinized from that point of view. So we as a collective can stand up in front of the whole population and hand on heart, feel very confident that we've done as good a job as is possible to make sure data privacy and anonymity is obviously protected that's out there. What it did mean, though, is obviously some of the data sources. So when we looked at the original apps and the early iterations that were happening earlier in the year, you know, some of the data points that they were able to pull back from that data wouldn't then be available. So that's more where the compromise came in terms of, you know, performance, scalability, robustness. No, we didn't compromise in that. And that wasn't really something that we would kind of entertain. Again, we needed people to be confident in the privacy concerns, but we also needed them to be confident in the actual product itself. So, you know, obviously we very much focused on that. And that's, again, a speciality of Nearform. You know, we've been building these very high scale enterprise apps at speed for many, many years. So we kind of know what we're doing. Again, obviously it doesn't change the fact is COVID is an evolving thing. So, you know, it's not one of these diseases or issues that we've known about for years and years, and there's a whole plethora of information and understanding. It's very much an evolving process for, you know, the scientific and medical folks as they kind of work it out. And again, for us, so again, we've had to work in that kind of collaboration and iterative kind of way is to say, right, let's get something that's robust out there. You know, to get people up and running and to actually give them the chance to help us combat this thing. But then let's continue to look and iterate and improve upon what's already there. And that process continues to go on. And as we've expanded this, and again, you know, the Irish government and the HSE have been, you know, phenomenal. We've expanded this not just within Ireland, but obviously with Northern Ireland and Scotland. We've now expanded that such that we have interoperability. So people using the HSE app traveling up to North or over to Scotland and other places will have that option for interoperability. And we continue to kind of expand those pieces as they get switched on. We've also obviously expanded the reach in terms of the underlying code that we built with the HSE is, you know, we support that now as an open source project. So, you know, that underlying COVID green code base that we built with the HSE is now available for any country in the world, again, to come in, they can scrutinize it so they can understand it, but more importantly, they can take that code and they can actually use it to help their own population and whatever else. And again, from Nearform's point of view, we're now up to 9-10 countries that we're supporting, you know, in active projects going forwards. Again, we're taking a lot of those kind of learnings and sharing that between all of our clients and customers from a government point of view to say, hey, listen, this is a learning we've had over here and this is a learning we've had over there. And the level of cooperation that's happening, even, you know, interjurisdictional cooperation is just phenomenal.
You're listening to Larry Breen of Nearform, the Waterford-based company behind the COVID tracker app. We'll continue our conversation right after this.
Tech Talk on News Talk.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch, or you can find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. Larry Breen of Nearform, the Waterford-based company behind COVID tracker, is still with me now. Larry, I mentioned there about, you know, the pressure and the demands for this kind of app. Nearform is incredibly successful and was incredibly successful before COVID tracker app with clients like Condé Nast and IKEA and so on. Was there any apprehension about getting involved in something like this? Because we've never had an app like this before. We've never had the kind and the need for the public buy-in on one particular app like this before. And it could have gone completely wrong. So was there any apprehension on that side of things?
So, you know, it would be overly arrogant to say, you know, there's never any concerns with coming into it. But, you know, this is what Nearform is all about. This is why these big, large brands, you know, on a global basis come to us and trust us to obviously do what we do. You know, we've assembled an elite team, again, across the globe, who basically know more than most other people. So we make sure we get the best folks in. We obviously continue that learning and that understanding. We bring a whole suite of tools, you know, and codified learnings that we use to make sure that we can obviously hit those kind of accelerated growths and whatnot else. You know, obviously this is something new to everybody in the globe. The biggest challenge, the biggest concern is the evolution of learning. Now we work in that kind of iterative, agile type approach. So we're okay with building something and then evolving it as it goes forwards. And we would do that, you know, with a lot of our customers. So that notion, again, we're very comfortable with as a team. the concern, I guess, that was in there was, you know, how quickly are those learnings and things going to happen? So if you go back to March, we were all just starting to really get into the whole thought and space of COVID and what was it and how was it actually going to go? You know, it's could we keep up with, you know, those iterations as fast as we needed to make sure that we actually got it going forwards. But again, part of, you know, the secret to Nearform success is, you know, we're not just a vendor to our customers. You know, we're not just a technology partner that sit out there and actually do something. What we try and do is we encompass our customers and the Nearform team in a kind of a one team environment. So we're actively communicating, discussing, deliberating, and we build that absolute level of trust. So, you know, we can openly discuss and look at ideas and then evolve that kind of thing going forward. So from that point of view, you know, it really made for a really positive foundation to how the project teams actually approached it. And we'll continue to replicate that obviously with other countries as we go forwards and continue to sort of spread that whole message and spread the success of the Irish government and what they did as a leader in this.
As we are talking now, I'm looking at the app on my phone and we can see that there's 1.3 million active users. More than 4,600 COVID trackers have tested positive and uploaded their random IDs, and more than 8,400 COVID trackers were sent a close contact alert. Something we've talked a lot about here on News Talk is the buy-in for this app. We saw that it reached incredible numbers in the first 24-48 hours of launch. But unfortunately, there have been one or two little issues along the way. The big one being the battery drain issue. And I spoke to Garma Criesta, the project manager at the HSE for the COVID tracker app, about this in the aftermath. And he said that that was an oh dear moment, but it was all hands on deck to try and get it fixed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, no, very much so. Again, remember, everything here is moving at pace, whether it's the app or the evolution of the actual illness and treatments and how it goes. Everything is moving extremely quickly. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, the bad thing is, you know, sometimes things crop up. So, you know, as Gar called it, you have those little oh dear moments. The great thing about it is the minute, and literally it's by the minute, as soon as these things are identified, whether it's, you know, through, you know, media, journalism, feedback, or again, we continue to test. So there's been thousands and thousands of hours of testing, and we continue to do that again with all of these, you know, countries that are collaborating. But the minute there's an issue identified, everybody, you know, just dives into it and resolves it. And again, we'll do whatever is necessary to actually make it done. So obviously from the HSE's point of view, Gar, Fran and the team, obviously they're really driving that from that point of view, so they'll pick up and they'll champion it. Obviously the Nearform folks will get in there as fast as we possibly can, but also we're able to bring the might of like Apple and Google and anybody else who's necessary, and everybody is open to it. So it's, you know, obviously we as a company are super proud to be able to do such a wonderful project and to be able to have such an impact on obviously our local population, but even the wider global population. But what we've been super happy about and very, very, very proud of is the level of collaboration. So we've seen it across the board where technology partners who are now partners, once upon a time, you know, would be fighting for their own space and worried about, you know, the politics of stuff. That piece has kind of gone away. And when it comes to this, everybody's a case of it's a can-do attitude. So if there's an issue, if there's a problem, if there's a little blip, and they happen, that's just life. What everybody does is literally jump on it, and we're seeing these fixes resolved within minutes or hours. It's that kind of fast, not normal iteration cycles where it's like monthly release cycles and whatnot. It's just fabulous.
Yeah, the point on collaboration is interesting, because this has been obviously in dreadful circumstances, but it has been a good case study in terms of the cooperation between government, different sectors, private tech companies, and then the big tech giants like Apple and Google. That level of collaboration, I don't think I have seen that before.
So again, there's always been that level of interaction, and you know, there's those relationships that are always happening there in the background that people don't actually see, but they're a little bit reserved. You know, they're not as forthcoming and as driven as they have been since this kind of crisis hit. And I think, you know, we've got to look for the positive, you know, in everything that goes on in the world. And obviously, there's been a lot of, you know, turmoil and trouble, and you know, there's a lot of people struggling with the whole COVID piece. What we do see as some of the positives that are actually coming out of it is, you know, there's a new way of working, there's a new way of thinking, and things that previously, so, you know, go 2019 and before, people would say are impossible, are now part of the everyday fabric of what we do. So absolutely, collaboration between government and industry, technology partners, you know, competitors, everybody kind of coming together and really sort of working it forwards. And again, sitting underneath that, if you look at the open source side of this, so, you know, Ireland, HSE, obviously with Nearform, we built the project, we got Ireland up and running, but we took that project and HSE were happy to support it, that we actually, you know, stuck it up on the, you know, open source platform available for everybody to use. And it's not just about putting it up there. It's also a case of, and we've been actively involved and, you know, participants to a number of these calls, but we know there's a whole bunch more going on where other countries and regions and jurisdictions, you know, have asked for additional support and even just the voice on the end of the phone. And, you know, the Irish government, you know, from the HSE, the government itself, Enterprise Ireland, IDA, anybody who can, has been more than happy to step in and do what they can to help everybody on a global basis and really get sort of the green message out there that, hey, this is something we've learned from, this is something we've done, and we're more than happy to share it with, you know, a global audience, especially on something that's going to, you know, impact this global pandemic that we're all affected by. It's great.
Yeah, no, it is. It's as I said, it's a really nice case study just to see that collaboration and the success of it as well. I've noticed, because it's me and I'm obsessed with it, but I've noticed quite a few new features in the app over the last little while. So we got, you know, greater data put into the app, so you could see by county, you could see very comprehensive graphs, as much information as you want basically is there. Also during the week, we saw the arrival of the pause tracking feature, which I think is very helpful for people in certain professions. Are we going to see this continuing to evolve? It's not finished, is it?
No. So, you know, I don't think it will finish until COVID decides to be finished. So, you know, from that point of view, again, we're learning more and more. And as we bring on more countries, you know, not just with the Nearform product, but just generally dealing with digital contact tracing and contact tracing on a wider scale, as we understand the effects of the different mechanisms against this pandemic, obviously there's a lot more learnings. And again, the whole global community are collaborating and on a more, you know, localized basis. So, you know, the HSE folks are continuing to obviously look at the data, listen to the feedback from various folks, and again, talk to all the rest of the partners that have, you know, have got moved forward. So we got, as we say, 9-10 folks that, you know, Nearform have helped get a product to market or are helping get a product to market. Again, all of those have got different experiences and different observations. They get put back into the melting pot, and, you know, and therefore we start to look at what are these new elements that will make it better, more user-friendly, and obviously drive that level of adoption from, you know, 1.3 million to 2 million or higher. Do you know what I mean? That we want to put it in people's hands and make it as user-friendly and productive as we possibly can. And ideally we want everybody out there. So we had that initial surge, you know, when we launched it, which was great. Love to see everybody get on board. You know, we need to see another push. You know, we've seen, you know, this latest, you know, round of lockdown, you know, hopefully we're going to see the numbers start to diminish. And again, lockdown will be eased and restrictions will be eased and we'll actually be, you know, moving back in the right direction. These manual and digital contact tracing solutions are part of that. So if people want to get back to normal, you know, these are the kind of things that we want people to be actually able to do. And if we can iterate on that and make it more user-friendly and make it more engaging for people that encourage them, then, hey, we're happy to do it.
And it is the easiest thing we can do. Like, I've said it a million times on this show and across the shows here on News Talk. All we're being asked to do is stay home, stay away from people, wash your hands, wear a mask, and put the app on your phone. It's completely free. It's available on the different platforms. Just search for COVID Tracker and you will see the official one. Put it onto your phone. If you're on Android, leave your Bluetooth on and then you forget about it. You don't need to do anything else. And it is as simple as that. And I really, really do encourage you to have it on your phone, Encourage your parents, your friends, other people in your life to put it on your phone, because it can make a difference and help. And we've heard in recent weeks the pressure that the contact tracing system is under. So it is the smallest of actions, but it can have a big impact. Larry, I'm very grateful for your time, and I do wish you and all the Nearform team every success in the future.
Yes, thanks very much. It's been great talking to you.
Tech Talk on News Talk.
TechTalk at newstalk.com is the email address for any questions or comments, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We're going to talk about cars now. As I've said approximately a million times, I don't drive, but I am intrigued to see the development that's going on in the vehicle space at the moment, because there is so much change going on from pretty much every single one of the big manufacturers. It doesn't matter how long they've been around, they are shaking things up thanks to technology. And I'm joined once again by Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Derek, welcome back. What are we talking about this week?
So this is the Honda E. This is Honda's first ever full electric vehicle. So produced from the ground up, it's not like other vehicles where you may have a petrol or a diesel engine. And what they've done is they've taken inspiration from their first Civic back in the 1970s and went, if this car was in 2050, what would the car look like? So they've thought about the future of car design, and then they've brought it back to 2020. So they've made this car that is, it looks like nothing else on the road.
So let's talk about the outside before we move our way in. Does it look like sort of a spaceships type car? Because I know sometimes, like with the Teslas, for example, you know the second that appears on the road what that is because of every element of the design. Is this similar, or is it more like some of the other e-vehicles that are on the road where they just look like normal cars, but there's the odd telltale?
This will be like a little hatchback, a city hatchback. So it won't be massive, but it won't be looking like anything else on the road. It has a kind of a face in the front of it. Its two headlights look like eyes, and the license plate section looks like a mouth. So when you see a Honda E on the road, and if it's in the white color, it looks like something from Star Wars, like a stormtrooper. It's got glass black elements to it, and it has an interesting bonnet where the actual charging port is right up in the middle of it. It's a black glass square that opens up, and that's where you actually plug it in. So outside, design wise you'll definitely know it's an EV. It doesn't come in any other variant. And the other interesting thing about it, Jess, is it doesn't have side mirrors. It is the first production car that has cameras for side mirrors. So These things only like stick out a small little bit, and we'll talk about what it looks like then on the inside. But outside, yes, it is distinctive. And do you know what, I'm getting a lot of people saying that they either really love it or actually don't like it. And that's always a great sign of a great design, that it's either for you or it's not. It's that Marmite element.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so, so you've insinuated that there's no wing mirrors, there's cameras. So we can already get the sense that when you open the driver door, sit in the seat, you're going to see something a little bit different.
Correct. So inside in the Honda E, it's all screens from one side all the way across to the other side. So right on the edges of the two doors, passenger and driver door, you have 2 6-inch screens, which are the screens that the cameras, the wing mirrors or the side mirrors, are going to be. And Honda have done this for a couple of different reasons. Number one, it is reducing wind noise, because there's less stuff outside to catch the air as you're driving past. Also, it's more aerodynamic. So with fuel efficiency being a huge importance to electric vehicles. And then the last one, and they've actually shown where cameras work better because there is a bigger field of vision normally in the normal setting, and they actually have a wide angle mode. So when you sit into this, you go, I can actually see more than I would normally do with the wing mirrors. And then you stick on wide angle mode, like on your camera, on your phone, sorry, you can see even more. So it's unnerving, number one, but number two, this is going to be the future. This is what people are going to start getting used to. So you've got your screens on either side.
Okay, but before we go any further than that, so in the wing mirror thing, you know, if you're learning to drive, one of the first things you get taught is to look in the mirrors and to you know, what to watch out for and your blind spots, mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. So this is going to change that. So if I am sitting behind the wheel of the car and I look where the wing mirror is at the moment, I'll just see a little camera. And for me to see the contents, I kind of need to shift my head in a little bit to look between the steering wheel and the door. And that's where the camera is.
Internally. And I suppose the driving instructors, it's a great question. I suppose the driving instructors will see that, are you checking the screens / mirrors is what things are going to be. Because you can also get side mirrors that are cameras in the Audi e-tron, which is at the other end of the screen of the extreme with nearly €100,000 worth of a price tag. So moving forward, it will be when you're doing your driving lessons and driving tests, are you checking your mirrors will be what I suppose they'll be checking for, or your screens. It may not be as big of a head tilt or move left and right to look at those screens, but the instructor or tester will be looking to see if you're checking the screens.
And from an insurance point of view, because I know this is a hot topic at the moment, last time you were on the show we were talking about electric scooters and electric mobility devices, I suppose, if you want to call them that. And one thing that I've seen a lot of in recent weeks and months is the presence of GoPros, where if someone is on a scooter or if someone's on a bike, they're wearing a GoPro in case they get into an accident or in case something happens. Will the cameras on this car be recording, and should something go wrong, will it have captured footage in any way, shape or form?
Good question. And the answer is no. These don't record. So unlike a Tesla, where they have that actual camera option of sticking a memory card in there, but with the Honda, to my knowledge, they don't record. It's literally just visual aids so you can see what's happening around you. It may be something that they'll look at in the future.
Okay, so that's one aspect of it. So once you get over the fact that you've got screens and cameras instead of your wing mirrors, that's not the end of the screens and the tech, sure it's not?
Correct. So you've got another screen in front of the steering wheel. So that's giving you the range, your speed. So car information about you and your driving. That's fairly standard in a lot of cars. A lot of other vehicles would have an electronic or an analog dials. That's fine. So that's screen number three. And then between that screen and the rest of the dash, there are two 12.3-inch touch screens. So from left to right, or all the way across your dash, it is one bank of screens. So on these two, you can actually start adding in the apps that you're interested in. So I want the navigation app, I want the car details. You can plug in a USB, and if you're parked up or charging, or you are somebody's gone into the shops, you can start watching stuff on the screen through a USB device, and you can switch the screens between the one that's nearest the driver over to the passenger side. So if myself and yourself are heading down the country and you want to do something on your screen, whether it's navigation or tune the radio station, you can't watch stuff while you're driving, but I can swap that screen over to you. So you can be working away on that, and I have the screen that I want nearest me. So it's a whole bank of screens from left to right.
This does sound like, you know, we're driving the Starship here and we just have the touchscreen interface that the whole way across, as you said, the dashboard in the car. What's the, let's kind of go step by step. So firstly, what's the thought process behind this?
I think because it's a Japanese car, I think it's heavy tech. Obviously Japan known for their tech, and whether it's PlayStation or Sony or whatever it may be, it's a lot of tech. So that culture is very much tech focused. And what they've done with this car is, because the real estate and the space in Japan is so small, when you're charging your car, they've made it so that's like your living room, so that you'll enjoy being in your car when you're out and about, when you're parked up, when you're charging. And so what they've done is they've kind of taken that lounge. There's a fake wood effect. The seats are really comfortable. There's a bench seat in the back. And so what they've said is, we want to make sure that you're getting as much use out of your car as possible when it's not driving. And on top of that, then you've got as much as you can stick in a USB, which again you can do a lot of other cars. This car comes where you can actually have, there's a HDMI port in it as well. So a HDMI port is the one that's in the back of your TVs or your laptops or your monitors, where you can actually plug in a games console, you can plug in a streaming device like an Amazon Fire Stick or a Google Chromecast, and when you're parked up you can cast Netflix or anything you want to watch onto the screen of your car, or you can plug in a games console and you can play the game console while you're waiting or charging or whatever you're doing in the car. It's crazy stuff.
It is bonkers. And I have a picture here that you sent me, and I'll put it out on Twitter at JessKellyNT so people can see it. And it does look like something from the future, but when we did Tech Talk on the Pack Any Show and all the rest from Web Summit last year, I did a feature here on News Talk about the future of our vehicles and how it's not going to just stop at electric vehicles. You know, I've spoken to so many different car manufacturers who say that they're now hiring and have been for the last few years, they're hiring more software and hardware engineers than they are mechanics, because a car is just an extension of your home or your office, and it shouldn't be any disruption in your productivity just because you're on the move, be that the driver or the passenger. Stupid question time. Does that not all impact the battery performance of the car? If this is an electric vehicle and you need the charge to get from A to B, does, you know, me messing around on a Nintendo Switch in the passenger seat not impact the product or the performance of the battery?
No, because again, you're charging at a time. So you're and even if you're not charging at the time, because these screens are so efficient, they're using minimum energy from the actual battery itself. And you've got the separation between the battery for the car to propulse, to propel it along the propulsion system, and then you've got the 12 volt. But Jess, there's another screen we haven't talked about.
Go on.
Your rear view mirror has also a camera option as well. So instead of using just a mirror like we all do in our rearview mirrors, there's a little camera in the back windscreen that looks out and gives you a more a clearer view of the road rather than the rearview mirror as well.
Okay, now this can't be down to, you know, the, you know, wind efficiency and all that crack. What's the point? What's the purpose?
Literally, why not?
Oh, lads.
But your point of the car is an extension of where you're going to be, and people are hiring more developers and more designers. Actually, one of the newer electric vehicles coming out of the US at the moment is the Hummer, or the Humvee, the big massive one, the gas guzzler that we knew from 20 years ago. That's going full electric.
Wow.
And the operating system in that is going to be the Unreal Engine, which we all know from, if you're a gamer, from the games world. So a lot of these car manufacturers are now hiring games developers because of that user interface and how is it easy is it to, that we can help people play this game on a console. They're taking that expertise and bringing it to the car world and the vehicle world, like you're saying, hiring these developers. How can we make our interface in this car? Because it's all screens now, like we talked about with the Honda E. Whatever car you go for, that ability to make it as user-friendly, as intuitive as possible. And I know that some of the electric vehicles are thinking about, I don't think we want it, but they're thinking about having integrations with some of the conference calling like Zooms and Skypes, etc., so that you'll be able to take conference calls, again, while you're parked, but in your car. I don't know if we're ever going to get away from all these conference calls at the moment.
You know, this is giving me a little bit of an anxiety rash up my neck now, I have to say. I'm not wild about that. You mentioned there, like, you know, when you're parked and obviously you'd be charging the car, you're not going to be driving and dicking around with these screens. But the safety element, if you are the driver of the car and you're trying to do something on one of these very fancy touch screens, but you have cake on your hands or it's not doing what you want to do, is there the distraction factor there?
Yes, potentially there is. And a lot of them will disable some of the features when you are driving, which I think is a great driver assist. But you also have, like every other manufacturer, voice control. So you have OK Honda and the little assistant will come up. And the good thing about the voice control assistant in this vehicle is it's contextual. So if you say to it, where's the nearest Italian restaurant? And it goes, OK, here are the nearest four. Pick which one you want. You can then ask it a follow-up question, say, which one of them has Wi-Fi? And it knows the question, which one of them has Wi-Fi, is in relation to the Italian restaurant question. And then it'll say, okay, these four are the nearest ones with free Wi-Fi. And then you can follow up and say which one, and so on and so forth, which one has parking. So the contextual element of it, understanding what was the previous element of the question, and adding them all up together. And that whole hands-free experience, which we're all getting used to now, and having these assistants around our houses, that's just transferring into the car. And we know that Amazon have an element of the Amazon Auto, Alexa. And so it's a space where there's so much data that we can be collected from users, drivers, whether it's where they're going or what they're looking for. That's where those large organizations are looking to get into the cabin of the car as well. So the personal assistant in the car is a way of, if you've got cake in your hands, I'm not sure what you're doing, Jess, when you're driving along
eating cake. A donut, obviously. Oh, what right, else do you do?
There is that voice element of it as well, but not all functions will be available while you're driving so that you don't get too distracted.
Yeah, we were talking about the new iPhone, the new Apple launch a few weeks back with John Riley from the Effect.net, and we were talking about the Apple HomePod thing, which isn't available here, but I really, really liked the look of. And when I watched that launch event, it really struck me how we're just at the tip of the voice controlled iceberg. There are so many more capabilities for voice control. I think we still have a long way to go in terms of embracing it, in terms of it picking up the Irish accent, in terms of the different use cases for it. But I now, you know, when I walk into my home every evening, I just tell my Google Home to turn on the lights, turn on the telly, remind me to buy bin bags in the supermarket. And it's such a better way of doing things.
And it's weird when you go somewhere where you don't have that assistance. So whether you're away on holidays and you go to say something or ask what time is it or turn the heating up or down or add to the shopping list, and that isn't there. But that home assistant element is coming into the new Fitbit has the integration with Alexa, and we're getting away from electric cars now. But it's definitely coming into all that space. And I think I talked about it on our first show, Jess. Mm. We talked about the Polestar, which is the new electric vehicle coming out of a sister company of Volvo. And that's the one with the operating system that is run by Android Auto and Google. So rather than these manufacturers developing their own, very similar to Samsung and their Bixby, but we won't talk about that.
No, it's awful.
But some of these manufacturers are saying, okay, like Honda, we've got our own assistant. We don't want to work with Google or Apple or whoever it may be. But I always wonder how much resources have they got to make that a better assistant, because it's going to be hard to go up against the likes of the Apple, the likes of the Google, who are just have the resources to fire at all these assistants. But within the car space, it's definitely a place that we're going to see more and more of as you're driving along. And you think of something, whether it's adding to your shopping list or asking for directions or turn on the heating, or you can even say in the new Volkswagen ID3, my feet are cold. And the car understands it needs to turn on the heating, but direct the hot air down towards your feet. So you don't have to say, turn on the heaters and point. You can just say, my hands are cold, and it'll heat up the steering wheel. So again, there's that contextual element to it as well.
I would love to hear from you if you already have one of these fancy pants cars that you have a chat to more than you chat to your partner, or if you'd be, you know, nervous about one. I'd love to hear from you. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. We're chatting to Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Derek, what happens if there is a power cut, or if there is like a massive network outage and your car doesn't know how to do anything because the tech isn't working?
So the car itself, and a lot of cars, would have its own GSM connectivity in it, so it will have its own mobile data, so it will pick up, so you don't have to be plugged in anywhere or near to your own Wi-Fi at home. It knows where it is, and it can communicate with the outside world and the internet via itself. So that's the first thing. It will be able to do what it needs to do. You're not going to be left stranded. And then there's also, you need to start planning your trips. If there's an electricity outage, which doesn't really happen too often nowadays.
Yeah, but I'm a worst case scenario person. You need to understand this. The glass is always knocked over. It's not even half empty.
So there's a power outage and you've nowhere to go and charge your car. At that stage, you probably should have preempted and had some home battery storage so that you can charge off your solar power, or you can charge off some electricity that you would have generated yourself, so you've got your own storage solution. But I think we're living in a state and in the year of 2020 that we're not going to have mass power outages, etc. But the car is, and like all electric vehicles, they are thinking about that use case scenario as to what happens if this happens. And they're testing it in the winter time. Not that we get too cold here, we think it does, but when you're testing it in Norway and Finland and Sweden up in the Arctic Circle, or you're bringing it to the Sahara Desert and it's extreme heat temperatures, they need to make sure that wherever this car is sold globally, that it's going to function. High temperatures, low temperatures, high altitude, low altitude, stable electricity network versus one that's not stable. So they've taken all these into consideration. So I'd always be confident. Same thing with a petrol or a diesel car. You have to make sure that there is a functioning petrol or diesel station where you're going to be. And they're getting fewer and fewer between the further out you go into rural Ireland.
Okay, I'll calm down. We have spoken a lot on the show about 5G and the arrival of 5G to Ireland. We know that it's available on 3, Air and Vodafone. Do we think that the 5G capability, as the network develops across the country here in Ireland, will have much of an impact on our vehicles?
Yes, absolutely. I think that is one of the use cases that we're not thinking about a lot of, because the vehicle can do so much, very much like this Honda E we're talking about, with so many screens and so many applications internally with on those screens. The ability to transfer so much more data, whatever you want to call it, over 5G, whether it's micro or whether it's wide spectrum, the cars are going to be able to start utilizing this and being able to, I think where it's going to go, Jess, is cars are going to be able to start talking to cars and being able to learn from each other. So if you're up ahead of me, Jess, and you come across a traffic jam or an incident, or you've had to divert, that your car will start will talk back to my car to say, okay, I can see a number of cars up at the front of you have slowed down or stopped or had to divert. We're going to recommend that you go around that. And those apps are out there at the moment with the likes of Waze, where you can self-report. So it's kind of like a crowdsourced mapping and navigation system. But I think that the future is going to be that these cars are going to be able to start talking to ourselves. And this week we had the first beta testing of full self-driving on the Teslas in the US. And there's lots of videos on YouTube where the car changes lane, turns corners, does everything itself, and you are not touching the steering wheel. And this is going to only get better with the likes of the 5G.
Okay, so there's still a lot more development on the way in terms of cars, because cars have been around for ages. And as someone who doesn't really have a huge amount of interest in cars in general, you know, if like I've done reports from the Audi showroom here in Sandyford in Dublin, and you're like, yeah, like they're lovely looking cars. They're a lot of money, but they all kind of get me from A to B, but so does the Lewis, so I'm grand. But do you think that we're going to see more development, more evolution in terms of the vehicles that we see on our roads every day?
Yeah, I'm following a company in the US at the moment called Canoe. And what it looks like is there's no steering wheel. It's literally four wheels and a place where you can sit down inside, a kind of like a bench all the way around internally. So you could have three or four people along the back, three or four people along the front, faced back, if you can, if I can describe it correctly. Mm-hmm. And the car literally pulls up outside your door. It knows that if a couple of people are going to Grafton Street and you've told the app, I'm heading towards Grafton Street, and the nearest car/vehicle is passing by in 5 minutes, and you can jump in if you like and join that group of people heading towards the city centre, so that you're not having, so it's like hailing taxi-ish, but it's autonomous driving.
Yeah, I saw these in Las Vegas earlier this year at the Consumer Electronics Show, and I remember at the time looking at them, it kind of looks like Wall-E, you know, that robot from that Disney movie. They kind of look like Wall-E, but you can kind of sit inside them. And I was like, geez, I can't imagine that. And then I watched an episode of Black Mirror where pretty much the identical thing is in Black Mirror, and they just roll around the place. And as you said, you just input your destination and it takes you there without any human interaction, which is kind of strange, but for those of us who don't drive, I think it could be a game changer.
That, and then you've got the vision of Tesla and Elon Musk, where he's saying if you buy a car off us, you can actually hire that car out during the day when you're using it as a robo taxi, and it just goes off and picks people up and drops people off, and then it comes back to you in the evening or you've told it I need it from lunchtime to head to here to go to the doctor's. And so that whole sharing of cars and that whole autonomy, it's so much going on in that space at the moment. There's a couple of US cities that are working with car manufacturers at the moment where they're allowing them to drive around without anybody actually steering them. They've got safety people in the front with them. You probably had that in Las Vegas. Mm. But that whole area of self-driving autonomy. Now, I don't know, is there any car out there at the moment that can take you from Achill Island to Galway because of the Irish roads along the Wild Atlantic Way with sheep running out and weather and snow and ice? And there's going to be use cases for that. But what Elon is saying with the latest full self-driving beta that's been rolled out, he's saying he's going to have a million cars around the world constantly learning from each other and turns left, turns right, different things that are happening. And that whole artificial intelligence model of learning from each other, very much like a Google search engine, it keeps learning from itself by the users that are using it. And that's what it's all about.
That's mildly terrifying, but I'm also very excited for it. Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, thank you so much for your time as always.
Thanks, Jess.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.